Hey, everybody, Patrick McFarlane here of the Liberty Weekly podcast and also the Liberty Bigly podcast, where you will be hearing these sounds, or on float.app, float.app, where I am live streaming currently. How are you all doing? I know it's been a hot minute since I did a Liberty Bigly podcast, but I'm coming at you with one that I think you will enjoy. And in fact, this is it will be a live podcast version reading of my Substack article that I just came out with. Actually, well, it hasn't even sent yet. This, you Liberty Bigly and Float people, I suppose, are the new Liberty Weekly elite. I've always been saying that the Liberty Bigly podcast listeners are the Liberty Weekly elite. So you'll be getting this first. However, this is an email that will be scheduled to go out tomorrow morning, which is December 27th, 2020. Sunday, to be more precise. And this article is entitled Defiling the Sacred Feminine, The Matrix, Bohemian Grove, and the Portrait of the Black Future. And you're probably sitting there wondering how I've managed to weave a thread in between all those topics. I don't really know. This is kind of reminiscent of the Thought Crime Thursday series that I did when I first had started the Liberty Weekly podcast. In fact, from even before I had started the Liberty Weekly podcast, I was blogging at libertyweekly.net, and I had a series called Thought Crime Thursdays, which a lot of them were actual articles that I wrote, weaving science fiction and dystopian films together with libertarianism. So check my late archives on Liberty Weekly. There's a Thought Crime Thursdays tab that will have some of my works, I suppose. However, I was getting ready to release this and I was trying to proofread it. And they always say, if you want to proofread something, either read it out loud or you can put it in Grammarly. But if you read it out loud, it will work the best. So here, I thought I'd kill two birds with one stone. But here we go. So again, defiling. Oh, and if you want to subscribe on Substack and get my emails and my posts, that will be at libertyweekly.net/Substack, S-U-B-S-T-A-C-K, Substack. So libertyweekly.net/Substack. So here we go. Defiling the Sacred Feminine, The Matrix, Bohemian Grove, and the Portrait of the Black Future. This is very black-pilled. The dark alleyways of the internet are inundated with the red pill versus blue pill analogy introduced by the 1999 science fiction film The Matrix. I believe it's an allegory, not analogy. Although I sometimes find the pill allegory to be passé, its insight and utility have recurred throughout my career as a content creator and pundit. For those readers who are not familiar with the concept, Know Your Meme defines the term red pill thusly. Its origin, the science fictional concepts of the red pill and the blue pill originate from the 1999 science fiction film The Matrix, wherein the main protagonist Neo, portrayed by Keanu Reeves, is offered to take either a blue-colored pill or a red-colored pill, the former of which would allow him to remain in the simulated universe within The Matrix and enjoy the comforts of life in ignorance, while the latter would lead him to escape from the fabricated reality into the physical realm that is harsher and more challenging in nature. Just a brief aside that you won't get if you just simply read the article is that The Matrix is one of my favorite film series. In 1999, I was 6 years old, and I remember it coming out, and I remember getting it. It was one of the first DVDs that we got when we got a DVD player. And I would watch the fight scenes over and 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 over again. And I really liked it, but it wasn't until I was an anarchist and even years after that I really realized the message of the film. Although the Wachowski sisters, now I've heard them go on talking about how it's some kind of an analogy for the patriarchy or some kind of oppressive gender constructs or something, which I always made me laugh because it seems like they're bending the craziest interpretation out of something that they clearly created to mean one thing. It's kind of like if you listen to Meshuggah, they're a death metal band, progenitors of like the djent kind of sound, except they do it the best and it's real heavy. But they have this song called I Am Colossus, which the lyrics, I think I put this out in Patreon bonus content at one point. I did like a full analysis of the song, but the lyrics are definitely describing a colossus, like something that is, it's an allegory for government. I read that someone, one of the band members actually is an anarchist or is like an ANCAP, and they're a Swedish band, but let me just it says on the internet, it says the lyrics to this song describe God and religion as a monstrous colossus. And I don't know, it's not a very original take. People, it's so overdone to criticize religion at this point, I feel like. But it says, these are the lyrics to the song. I am the great Leviathan, insatiable colossus, titanic engulfer of lives. I reward you and I absorb you. I'm the monstrous mouth that hungers for your awe, immense construction of lies. I own you and disown you. I am life. I am death. You empower me. I'm a mammoth king evoked, conjured by your dreams, summoned by your fears. You need me. You feed me. I'm the imposing giant, infallible dictator. My rules apply to all. You'll heed me and bleed for me. I am life. I am death. I decide your fate. You empower me. You'd even kill for me. Guzzling down your dreams, the tears of unheard pleas I drink. Imbibe with such delight the fear that floods your temporal shell. Raging red rivers and streams, the kingdom of my shadow, where dread of man in endless night revives my every cell. To those who doubt, your wounds will never heal. To those who question my creation, I am not real. I am pain, I am grief, I'm the things you fear. I'm the lie whispered into your ear. I'm the great Leviathan, I'm dominance and greed. You imagined me, so I was conceived. I am life, I am death, you belong to me, call me what I am. I am Colossus. And actually, now that I'm reading that, it does kind of sound like it's about God and religion as a monstrous colossus, I suppose. But I think it easily would apply to the state, too. Titanic engulfer of lives, I reward you, absorb you. I'm the monstrous mouth that hungers for your awe. That just sounds like religion and the state go hand in hand. So immense construction of lies, I own you, I disown you. It sounds like the entire mythos beyond the government is one big lie. I'm a mammoth king evoked, conjured by your dreams. I mean, summoned by your fears. It's the fear of a competing state or chaos that people summon Colossus with. You need me, you feed me, I'm the imposing giant, infallible dictator. Now, that I see as being more applicable to the state, because I don't necessarily think, unless it's a theocracy, that the rules apply to all. It's a dictatorship. I suppose Christians would say that, you know, the rules of their morality would apply to everyone. You empower me as the state. You'd even kill for me, which is, I think, more blindly the state than perhaps religion. Raging rivers and streams, the kingdom of my shadow, where dread of man and endless night revives my every cell. So I guess it could apply to both, but check that out. I Am Colossus by Meshuggah, Meshuggah. I think it's great. I know not all of you listen to heavy metal, but hopefully you can appreciate some intricate lyrics or appreciate it when it is. So sorry for that long aside. So anyways, the red pill is a metaphorical term used to describe the epiphany of the unpleasant truth of reality in a wide range of contexts. Originally introduced as a crucial plot device in the 1999 science fiction film The Matrix, the term has gained widespread usage online among conspiracy theorists and other advocates of minority views in defense of their radical beliefs and proselytism of new adherents. Conversely, the term blue pill is used to describe the act of choosing blissful ignorance over the harsh truth. So that is know your meme. That's their definition. I believe that's crowdsourced, like Wikipedia is. Of course, for those readers, this is me again. Of course, for those readers who are veteran internet creatures, you're most likely aware of other colored pills that have emerged to describe an assortment of worldviews. For instance, the black pill has been used to describe a nihilistic, fatalistic, or collapsitarian worldview. On the other hand, the white pill refers to a person who has taken the red pill, is aware of its uncomfortable truths, but is nevertheless optimistic. He understands that not everything in life is negative and humbly accepts the challenge of making positive change in the world, if only. So I thought immediately of How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, which was the topic of my first Substack article. I'm for some reason blanking on who wrote that, which is crazy. My mom told me she read the Harry Brown, of course. My mom told me to something, a detail you'll get on the Liberty Bigley podcast, you won't get on Substack or on Liberty Weekly, maybe. My mom told me that my grandfather, of course, I told Scott Horton that my grandfather was a big John Bircher, and he was, you know, woke on the Federal Reserve and all that in the John Bircher way, against banksters and everything. But I forgot where I was going with this. Anyways, my mom told me that my grandpa made her read How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World when she was a teenager or in her early 20s, sometime before 1994, because that's when my grandpa died. So it must have been between 1980 and 1994. Lost in the independent evolution, however, of the internet's red pill culture is the actual artistic and philosophical genius of the original film series, which I do believe is genius, even if the Wachowski brothers kind of went off the deep end. But according to the film stars, they were required to read simulacra. Man, I wish I figured out how to pronounce that before I hopped on the microphone. And simulation. Out of Control, The New Biology of Machines, Social Systems in the Economic World, which I think everyone in the conspiracy realm should read. Looking that up right now. Looks interesting. By Kevin Kelly, that is. And Dylan Evans' work on evolutionary psychology before. So the stars had to read those works before even opening the script. And the simulacra and simulation is actually, it's not the same as, what is that? Philip K. Dick had a work called The Simulacra. It was a, sorry about that. It was a dystopian kind of reminiscent, from what I understand, it was reminiscent of Bioshock in a way, something about underwater worlds. So if you're not familiar with the underlying concepts behind the Matrix trilogy, read a synopsis here. So I put a link to Wikipedia. While there are a multitude of philosophical elements present in the Matrix trilogy, the primary allegory of the film reeks of anarchist political philosophy. By far, my personal favorite take on the series was delivered by voluntarist, anarchist, freedom activist, and speaker Mark Passio in his 2013 presentation, The Matrix Trilogy Decoded. And this is a wonderful presentation. I really thoroughly enjoy it. I have it linked in the article here, but if you haven't listened to Mark Passio, he's a great speaker to listen to. He verbally grabs you by the lapels and kind of screams in your face a little bit. It's wonderful. So check that out. I put a link here. In his presentation, Passio explains how the Matrix itself is an allegory for control. Of course, from the anarchist perspective, those who do not realize they are trapped in the Matrix are those who falsely believe that the state is a legitimate institution. Status. Passio explains the crux of the resistance against the machine regime in the film. They are the three main characters of the trilogy, Neo, Trinity, and Morpheus. Together, they represent the three different aspects of human consciousness. Neo represents human will, courage, and action. Neo is our desire for true freedom. He is the exercise of conscience and doing what is right. Also, Neo is, I believe the name itself is kind of symbolic of a new man. I don't think it's the communist Karl Marx, Friedrich Engels version of the new communist man. I think it represents some kind of an ascended being. On the other hand, Morpheus represents, let's see, Morpheus represents the mind, intelligence, thought, and truth. In Greek, Morpheus is the revealer of dreams. Morpheus reveals the truth to Neo. The Matrix is a prison for the mind. It is a computer simulation projected onto the minds of human slaves who are being farmed by machines for their life energy. I don't know how much more clearly that could be the state, Wachowski brothers. Trinity represents our emotions, love, compassion, and the heart. She is the center. She is the sacred feminine. She is the bridge between the mind and the will. She brings Morpheus and Neo together. Proofreading. One could also say that the trio of characters also represent. One could also say that the trio of characters represents the Holy Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. I'll expand upon that. The Father, Morpheus, is the one who, you know, wakes people up. He's the breath. You know, he breathed into Adam and created Adam. The Son, Neo, is the God's action on the earth in terms of Jesus coming down, coming to the world and creating action, saving people, teaching, creating, in a way, creating the New Testament of the gospel. So he is the embodiment of God's action. And maybe I'm bastardizing this because, you know, I'm not an expert on religion, but spitballing here, the Holy Spirit, I would posit, sounds to me more like the sacred feminine force. Although it is, I believe it was the Holy Spirit that conceived Jesus inside the Virgin Mary. However, you know, it kind of seems like going back to what I wrote here about Trinity is that she's the bridge between the mind and the will. So it seems like the Holy Spirit conceiving Jesus on earth, or the Holy Spirit making things, if the Holy Spirit makes things happen, then it's more like Neo. So maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. But in his analysis, Passio identifies a major theme of the film, which is the plight of the sacred feminine, hence my title, Defiling the Sacred Feminine. At the beginning of every film in the Matrix trilogy, Neo, the human will, is asleep. Go back and watch it. In Trinity, the sacred feminine is in grave danger. They are both separated from Morpheus, the mind. I believe they're also separated from each other, too. Indeed, the peril of the sacred feminine does not just exist in the Matrix trilogy. Fiction is but a tool for exploring and expressing reality. Here we go. Hold on to your butts. In July of 2000, filmmaker and radio host Alex Jones infiltrated the Bohemian Grove, a retreat for wealthy elites located in California. Jones and his cameraman were able to film a ritual known as the Cremation of Care. Wondering how this is related? In it, wealthy elites in business, finance, and government appear to perform a ritual in front of a 200-foot-tall stone owl. During the climax of this ritual, the participants cheer while an effigy of a child is burned. The Cremation of Care ritual is not fiction. Indeed, its existence, as filmed by Jones, has been confirmed in several major publications, and I provide links to these articles confirming its existence. In Business Insider, Vanity Magazine, and one other one. The Huffington Post, I believe. Washington Post, sorry. Some have attempted to dispel rumors that the ritual is a satanic testament to Moloch, whom Alex Jones asserts is an ancient demon of child sacrifice. These detractors argue that the purpose of the ritual is to rid its participants from the dull cares of life, such as anxiety, stress, and overwork. A more sinister interpretation of the ritual is one that I would posit, and it positions the Cremation of Care as an attempt to rid its participants of this sacred feminine force. Further, we are participants in a massive reification of the Cremation of Care ritual. It is no better embodied than by the incredibly antisocial policy behind the global regime's response to COVID-19. Were you wondering if that would come into play? That's the dark future. Policies such as social distancing, mask mandates, remote work for the privileged white-collar class, and prohibited work for the rest of you peasants, and the banning of social gatherings alienate us from each other. In this isolation, what is left to nourish the sacred feminine force of care, love, compassion, fellowship, and empathy? These policies are nothing new. In episode 143 of the Liberty Weekly podcast, I interviewed communist escapee Carmen Alexi. Carmen and I discussed her upbringing in communist Romania during the 1980s. One of the most profound observations she made concerned the lack of empathy present in a communist society. This is because everyone is so destitute, the only way to increase their lot in life is to lie, cheat, steal, or accept bribes. Much like the totalitarianism of the COVID-19 regime, I would argue that communist governments defile the sacred feminine by suppressing human interactions in the marketplace. Old school communist authoritarianism has only donned a new visage, that is, the COVID-1984. It started with 2 weeks to slow the spread. The goalposts, of course, then shifted to months of lockdowns. We are currently on day 283 of the first 2 week quarantine in California. By suppressing that which makes us human, the sacred feminine, the regime is also alienating us from our will and our minds. Without the heart, the sacred feminine, the human race is the spiritual equivalent of the walking dead. I wanted to put in an analogy here of when you shoot a deer during deer hunting and you explode its heart and it runs for like, I don't know, 20 yards, and then it realizes that it's dead, so it lays down and dies. But I didn't do that because I couldn't fit it in. Anyways, we are there. Much like the subterranean hellscape the human race inhabits in the Matrix, the chasm of the black future has seemingly engulfed us. For surely the regime will continue to ravage the sacred feminine until a Morpheus appears to awaken the human will. Until that day, dear reader, we persist in uttering, "Wake up, Neo." So I hope that you enjoyed my oral rendition of this Substack article. In the future, posts like this may be behind a paywall. This one's a little longer than what I've done before. Little blurbs I don't think will be beyond a paywall, but something that has lots of links, and I had to actually put 2 or 3 hours of work into this piece, that might eventually be behind a paywall. However, little newsletters and things like that, less intense work, that won't be. And you can also sign up for my email list too, libertyweekly.net/email. But on the Substack here, go to libertyweekly.net/Substack. Then you can find my Substack page and subscribe. And hey, if you're on my email list, I can keep in touch with you if I get shut down from the YouTubes or Facebook or any other of the large, tech giant social media platforms. But as you all may or may not know, you on Float, you on MeWe, you on Library.tv, Odyssey, BitChute, Minds. Anyways, you all know that you can always follow me. So I appreciate you guys listening. I hope that you had a wonderful Merry Christmas. And I also hope that this finds you well. All right. Well, I'll talk to you guys later. Peace.